happy to welcome you here today in this Phasix Genix body scan. I don't know what we call these things anymore. We're glad you're here. See your bright smiling faces, new friends, old friends, vague friends, people wondering now, why did I come here and who is this guy that I don't recognize anymore? Some interesting things happen. I'm going to share those with you a little bit today. But we're happy to have you here. This is an exciting time for us at our company. It's an exciting time for our practitioners. It's nice to know that you're not alone out in the world in Bionetics, weird as that may be and weird as you may seem and as psychoceramic as some people think you are. You know what psychoceramic is? A crackpot. Colorado Springs was recently in the news because of the Texas 7 that were arrested here. But one of the stories that didn't get covered in the news because of that, there was other excitement at the police station at the same time. It turned out somebody stole all the toilet seats at all the police departments while they were out. They were out taking care of business with the Texas escapees. And the problem is now the police have nothing to go on. Is that okay? All right. I know I get judged by the humor in a little bit there. There were a group of doctors. There was a general practitioner, a pediatrician, a psychiatrist, a surgeon, and a pathologist. They all went duck hunting. And they're in their blinds together, and here comes a bird. And the GP says, well, it looks like a duck, and it quacks like a duck, and it flies kind of like a duck. It could be a duck, but he didn't shoot. The psychiatrist, or the pediatrician, says, well, it could be a duck, but maybe it's not a mature enough duck to lose its life, and he didn't shoot. And the psychiatrist says, well, it looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, but I don't know if the duck knows that it's a duck. So he didn't shoot, and the surgeon goes out and wham! And says to the pathologist, go see what that was. Okay. Just remember where you got them, put them down, you don't know where they've been. This is an opportunity to enlighten the room as we play with the lights and a couple of things. I'm going to kind of sit down so we can see and everybody get an opportunity. One of the most significant questions everybody's asked me is my weight loss program, and so I guess we're going to cover that one first. This will be kind of set up in a format in two ways. The first part is part one, which is appropriately named because it will be at the first. And then the second part is part two, which will follow part one, which will be the second part. You guys are really slow. Did you have coffee or what?
No.
Oh, good. Well, I understand. We've had some requests. Significant information and feedback from different practitioners around the world, and you should realize that this is now over 250 practitioners worldwide. Yeah. And which is really phenomenal for something that started out in a bedroom of my house. And I can remember the day that it started that I had I had 90 days of savings, and I told my wife, let me just try this for 90 days and see how we do. She says, really? And a mother of five children with only 90 days savings in the bank and her psychoceramic husband wants to do bioenergetic medicine. Well, we're still married, and here you are, and we're excited. We're really excited to have you participating in this. I don't know that you can comprehend completely the role that you play for us. I don't think that we can convey to you our heartfelt appreciation for your willingness to accept the concepts, principles, and parameters and protocols, all of the P's that we go through to make changes in our medical model and our health and wellness model. And so we're grateful for you. And we're grateful to have your participation, your support, your insight, your understanding, your activity, and your pioneering spirit. I am convinced one day all your names will be on some list, on some plaque somewhere for Star Trek medicine, because that's where we're headed. If our medical model worked, we wouldn't be here. And we know that it doesn't, and so here we are. And that's a key part to that process. And it's significant to me to see you here and share this time with you. In relationship to that, there are some things that we, as we reviewed as a company in various processes, things that people need to have a basic understanding of, and key fundamentals of a basic protocol. When we first started teaching some of the principles, one of the key things that we wanted to do was ensure your success. But the other thing that we didn't want to do was stifle your creativity, capacity, and healing skills. So we have created at the Academy the BST coursework, the BNP1 program, the BNP2 program, the BNP3 and 4, and we're working on a 5. We're working on, just for your information and dinner time conversation, we're working on getting those things accredited so that you can get credit for the learning that you're going through and the gray hairs that you develop through that learning process. Relative to that, yes, it will grandfather you in. If you've already graduated and been practicing, that was one of the requisites of what we purposefully sought out people to accredit, create the accreditation, so that we didn't have to come back and recertify you. Well, there might be a little bit of that, but not so much that you couldn't handle it. But the process is one that we have college campuses now looking at incorporating coursework of what you've already studied if you've been a practitioner for a while, to enjoy those as a part of classes in alternative and integrated medicine. And we anticipate phenomenal things in that this year. So that's one aspect of where we're headed. But the other part is to enhance your success, and in answering questions, we are going to review today the basics of balance, and the key of that is fundamental to our success. And we'll reiterate some of these facts and figures. Some of these things aren't going to be new to some of you. We're going to realign it in a simple way to understand it in a maybe in a different way, but based on questions and answers that come through the Academy and questions and answers that come through GenX and Phasics, it behooves us all to review these things. So that's one aspect of what we're going to do today. And then we'll have an open forum, and you can ask me any question you want, and I will have an answer, because I can answer any question. The answer may be I don't know, but see, I can answer any question. But first and foremost, I guess most people that have already spent their... If I had a buck for everybody that always spends, I have a question. I wouldn't even be here. I could retire, and I don't want to do that either. But people want to know what happened, and since I'm not the... I don't throw nearer the amount of weight around the office that I used to. People want to know what happened to Spencer. And so part of that is something we're going to review today. Let's see. As a key part of the protocol that we teach and an understanding that we try to encourage people to gain, and we're going to focus on this with Dr. McFarlane on Saturday, so I encourage you to be here for the dental piece. Way back in 1951 when I started this, one of the very first German doctor that tested me told me I had to get my amalgam fillings out, and that I had a certain level of mercury toxicity. And I was going to do it in Germany because he didn't think that there were any American dentists that were trained in it, although at the same time, in 76 and 77, I'd been working here in Colorado Springs with Hal Huggins, and I think most of you know his name. Hal was a pioneer for the industry in America, for the American Dental Association. He's lost his license to practice in the U.S. He's now got a thriving clinic, I understand, in Mexico, and has referral people here in the States to get people down there. And no disparaging remarks, he does some good work, but there were some people that were still challenged after they had the mercury removed. And of course, from his perspective, that wasn't his issue, but it becomes actually our issue as a holistic practitioner. We need to have an overview and a perspective of every aspect of the, of that process. Well, I was about ready to go to Hal when I found out that I couldn't get my schedule cycled right in Germany to do the Germans over there, and I could spend all day talking about all the things there, but then someone else told me, don't go to Hal, go do something else. And after a few investigations, long and short of it was, I didn't get my amalgams out. Well, that was an interesting experience because I knew that they were significant. I knew they had a significant role in my health and well-being. And if you don't have your amalgams out, sometime you need to. That's the long and short of it. But it was almost 20 years after that I discovered a dentist. And it was providential, in my opinion, that I discovered a dentist, our good friend Dr. McFarlane, that not only would remove the amalgams, but do oral nathic and a complete whole restoration to the teeth, which is a total different aspect of what is necessary in biological dentistry. The difference is between just taking the amalgam out and putting in a filling, or a replacement material, and putting in a replacement material that restores the teeth to their proper and perfect function and the form and shape that they were originally designed by the Creator. And that is key. That's very significant because it has a significant relationship to the health and well-being of the jaw, the alignment of the teeth, and other phenomenal factors related to that. So that doesn't mean if you've gotten them out and you didn't do that right, but that you're not benefiting from it. But there is one more parameter, and Dr. McFarland's going to discuss that at length and in detail on Saturday. So I waited long enough for him to do that for me, and it worked phenomenally well. And it was real interesting way back when in the old days. That was a German doctor that tested me said, as soon as you get your amalgams out, you'll lose 40 pounds. And you know, I have always been built for comfort, not speed. Everybody's got the videotapes at home. You see me? I got all the cream in the family, and so I was kind of looking forward to that because I didn't eat to excess or anything like that. I just was carrying the weight. Well, the adipose tissue, if you already know, holistically stores a lot of toxicity for the body to protect it from hitting vital organs and systems, and that's where I was keeping it. Now, relative to that process, as I started doing that, and all of you probably know this, and maybe you don't, but there's a relationship, a causal chain, in the toxic burden of the body. The most significant toxic burden that we have as organisms and systems that we cannot process is metal, heavy metal. Heavy metal toxicity is what will kill us all. Or the susceptibility to other infections that come as a relationship to that heavy metal toxicity. I see people not in agreement, not learning anything new, but making notes maybe. But heavy metal is what will kill you. We do not, as an organism, process metal. We don't have the enzymatic capacity. We don't have the biology, we don't have the biochemistry, we don't do metal. Functionally, as a result of that, what carries over is that we create a symbiosis with other things in our environment to help us process that, and that symbiosis is associated with parasites. Parasites, certain of them are better than others, but parasites will help with the process of metal because of their enzymatic function. Their capacity to process metal is better than ours, and so we let them in. It's kind of like my Uncle George. He comes about for the 4th of July. He likes hanging in Colorado for the 4th of July, and then he stays till Labor Day. When he says, well, you don't have any more food. And we say, yeah, we know, George, you ate it all. He says, well, I'm leaving. And we say, thank you. But parasites come to take advantage of that, and we create a symbiosis with parasites to allow them to have a place in hopes that they'll help us process some of the heavy metal. But then, of course, because our immune systems are depleted, our capacity to eliminate those on our own get compromised. Parasites then create a toehold and build a longer relationship than we'd encourage, and as a result of that, they take over. They create an environment of dysbiosis in the bowel that contributes to malabsorption, poor digestion, candidiasis, and all the other things with pathogenic yeast, which then opens up things for opportunistic organisms from bacteria and viral forms and other things that take advantage of the immune system. You should know, you should recognize, you should understand that the disease model that is out there is just chasing different forms of energy. It's not the bug that kills us, generally speaking. But it does. They're real, but they're not the cause. They're not the relational process. The key is always tied to greater and different energies, and we're going to explain some of that, more of that in the basics. Well, as I eliminated my mercury toxicity, we discovered a few other things. I had a little bit of cadmium poisoning. I had a little bit of lead, and I had a little bit of barium. And you know what you do with people that have barium? You bury them. So those metals were significant, so I started doing some chelation therapy to get that out. About the same time that I was doing that, I got to go do some training in Hong Kong. Hong Kong is a beautiful, wonderful, exciting city. I recommend that everybody go there at least once, because sometimes it just feels so good to leave. But no, just, I'm kidding. I liked Hong Kong, but... While I was in Hong Kong, I ate things that I normally wouldn't eat, and I ate parts of... I don't typically eat pork, but I ate almost every part of the pig, and I think some parts the pig doesn't know the pig has. And after a while, I quit asking what part this was, because we don't need to go there. But it was a pretty interesting experience. And on one occasion, I was going with the doctors, and we'd... We ate out at every meal, and then we went to a variety of restaurants, and we went to this one restaurant that had a huge aquarium. All the restaurants had aquariums, but this one had the biggest one I'd seen that far. And it was full of everything, every sea creature you can imagine, and some you couldn't. And the doctor walks in, and he says, you like this taste? And he's pointing to the aquarium. And I just kind of look at the aquarium and I go, well, I don't know. I've never had that, because I didn't know what he was pointing to. And he said, well, okay. And so we walked back to sit at our table. And in the aquarium, at the bottom of the aquarium, was a 7-foot black eel. And we got to our table, and there was the eel already prepared on a beautiful, long, huge china plate just designed for that eel, with some rice noodles underneath and bok choy garnish. And the eel was all prepared rather rapidly. And I had learned the translator that I had told me the very first day. I mean, he sat me down and gave me a protocol. He said, you are the teacher. And I said, oh, thanks. And then he said, well, this is an honored position in Chinese culture, to be a teacher. Even if this guy is the president of the country and you are teacher, you're above him. Oh, okay. I was taller than all of them anyway. And in the process, though, he said, so in that revered place, you must eat whatever they present you, and they won't eat until you eat. Okay? And so do not offend them by not eating, because then nobody can eat. Okay? And so he says, eat everything they give you. And I said, okay. So I'd already gone through 3 or 4 days of this, and here's the yield, la, 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 la. And I go, okay, and you know, I think if we'd have given it a shot of penicillin, it may have lived. It could have pulled itself together and just kind of worked its way off the table. And of course, there are only two really good parts of the eel, you know, and they gave me the head. And then the other part because I was a teacher. Well, and so I had to eat that with the fish head soup and the other things. And the only thing I didn't have to eat, because one of the doctors didn't like them, was the chicken feet, although somebody told me when I came back, well, those are the best things over there. Okay. Well, the long and short of it was I ate a whole bunch of other stuff there, things I never asked about anymore. And as soon as I got back, I did a scan and to see what I'd picked up. And it looked pretty good. It didn't have anything unusual. And then I went on a real bunch of series of long, interesting other trainings to different places, and I didn't get to scan myself as often as I would. And I scanned myself every 6 or 8 weeks, which is what I recommend that you do. Well, I was teaching a class up in Fort Collins a few months after that, and one of the doctors I was training invited me out to dinner. We went and had some stuff, and I got some tainted fish. Oh, boy. And the tainted fish, I got a bit of salmonella with it. As far as I could tell, I got food poisoning from the fish. And I got really sick that night, and some of you were there for the class that we canceled and didn't get to see me, or whatever. I just got really sick, and as a part of that, I get to describe all this now anyway. I just had violent vomiting, and in part of the vomiting and the vomitus, I saw a bunch of tissue come up that scared me because I wasn't supposed to, I hadn't eaten that, you know. So I knew that was a part of Spencer. And it turned out to be a cyst for Entamoeba histolytica, which I discovered later on I had developed. If Entamoeba histolytica is an amoebic parasite, creates little cysts and then they rupture and they go out and do your thing. And I went and tested it on the plate to see what it was, and that was, it was Entamoeba. Well, some of you, if you've lived here locally, know Hannah Kroger. Maybe you don't. She was a great herbalist, and several years ago when I started this out in my bedroom, I worked with Hannah and a group of missionaries from her international church that had gone to work with herbalists over in China, and they all got Entamoeba histolytica and Giardia when they were in China, and when they came back, they were sick. And she and I worked together, me doing homeopathy and her doing herbs to get them turned around, but we lost two of them. Two of them died because of the infection. Two out of the 10, but the others we were able to turn around, so I knew it wasn't a good thing to have. But my body welcomed it on one side because of the relationship of the mercury toxicity and the heavy metals, and the long and short of it on the other end of that was that I had Entamoeba, I had versions of Pseudomonas and Salmonella, Giardia, and I got an oriental hookworm in the loop. And the interesting thing about those, typically they have a 90-day gestation infestation incubation period, so you're symptomatically no awareness of that going on, and I didn't have any symptoms. And they create the cysts. They're not designed commonly to live in humans. They most commonly live in our animal friends, and they. As you know, most parasites aren't designed to kill their host because that's their food source. But Entamoeba is mostly for, as I said, is for animals. But and typically, it doesn't occur in saltwater fish. It's in freshwater. But I found out I ate a lot of freshwater things too. So I'm assuming because the eel wasn't prepared that that's where I got it. That's one of the sources. But I can't say for sure. But relative to that process, it had developed 11 cysts throughout my colon, and large and small intestine, and a couple in my stomach, and one at the base of my esophagus. And if I hadn't have gotten the food poisoning and thrown that up, I wouldn't have discovered it. And the scan saved my life because I knew what it was. The phasics actually showed up into me, but at the top of my list, and I kind of grabbed a lily and laid down. Because I knew what that was. Well, it's kind of interesting to give you the perspective on it. It's a hard thing to diagnose. You don't diagnose that with the body scan. Medically, they don't go there because we don't have it in this country very much. In fact, the only places I found that dealt with it are deal with the boat people from the Orient, because they come over with it with Giardia and the other their stuff, and they take care of it. So I went through some treatment and some protocols and stuff, but the stuff I did first was the stuff that Hannah and I had had done together in 1978 and 79, way back when we were working together. And relative to that process, when I finally got to a point where I needed some more help, and I went to a couple of other doctors, and they analyzed what I had and figured it out, and then determined the infestation, it was kind of interesting that they all kind of looked at me and said, well, typically, medically, we would be diagnosing this in your autopsy, because we don't find this until you're dead. What happens is that after the cysts form in the bowel, they perforate the bowel, and the amoeba goes to the liver and to your brain, and then by the time they find it, it's in your autopsy. I've been fortunate to have it contained in just my GI system, and they're all gone. They're clear. Thanks to homeopathy, the phasics, and some really awful herbs. And when I get all of them, some of them I've been trying to find the herb therapy for it. It comes from the Orient, but you can't get a direct. Since Hannah has died, I don't know if you knew that, but since Hannah's died, nobody makes those herbs. You have to import them. But there are some other things available that help with that. And as soon as I get a list, we'll publish it on the website, because we'll see availability. But some of them recently have been being seized at places of importation. So if somebody knows backdoor ways of getting those in and we can get you the list, we'll tell you about how to do that. But the chances are, unless you go to the Orient, you won't get too much exposure to it. The homeopathy works. I used a vermifuge and amoebafuge because I had both worms and amoeba. I used the anthelmintic product from Dr. Recommends. I did, in addition to that, I did Paracleanse from Young Living and Living Oil things, if you're familiar with those, which was an effective support. And then a wide variety of other things to restore the bowel, and I'm on the rebuild now. My digestive system for a while got cleaned out. I had the cleanest colon on the planet. And my assimilation was limited, and I learned to be grateful to be able to eat a handful of food that much, because that's all I could take in.